Why do we lie?
You are lied to dozens of times a day. A range from little white lies, such as people telling you they're having a great day when in fact they're having a terrible day. A series of lies from loved ones and employers has the potential to change your life. Being able to understand when, why, and how people lie helps you establish a more honest relationship and prevents disasters from happening due to a falsely informed.
We lie because we want to avoid awkwardness, to flatter, to influence, to avoid a negative outcome, or to achieve a positive outcome. Another reason is that we want to make ourselves look more impressive so we can get admiration from others.
The majority of people cannot go an entire week without telling at least one falsehood. Despite the disheartening message that most people are liars, we can perhaps take solace in recognizing that most of the lies people tell are small, white lies. So what is a white lie?
We tell a white lie to avoid hurting people's feelings. Some examples are, I wish I could go, but I'm busy. Is, I would rather be home on my couch. I'm sorry, I forgot to respond. Is, sorry, I was avoiding you. We also say this to be polite, but some people get angry at you.
People lie, and some lies are more than others. But most people are mostly honest, most of the time. Taken together, studies seem to support the notion that while the average person is entirely honest across a typical day.
While you might like to think that you're an honest person, statistically speaking, you too are a liar. Researchers estimate the average person lies a minimum of once to twice per day.
The value of simple things.
Do you love pineapples? Do they make you feel absolutely crazy with excitement? Probably not. Lots of people quite like pineapples, but hardly anyone thinks that they're amazingly wonderful. 200 years ago, this was very different. At that time, pineapples were very exciting indeed. If you bought a pineapple, you'd have a special party and invite all your friends round to admire it. Everyone would get a tiny little piece and they'd talk about it after for weeks.
Why aren't we as excited by pineapples as people were 200 years ago? They still taste the same. The thing that's changed is the price. Today, a pineapple doesn't cost very much. But 200 years ago, they were extremely expensive. In those days, it was very difficult to grow pineapples and keep them fresh along a sea voyage. They cost as much as a car costs today. They were the most expensive thing you could eat.
Eventually, though, people worked out how to grow pineapples quite easily, and the price came down. At the same time, people became less and less excited by them. The story of pineapples tells us something about ourselves. When something is rare and expensive, we find it exciting. But when something is cheap and easy to get, we stop paying a lot of attention to it. We stop noticing what is actually nice about it.
Think about having a bath. It's quite nice to have a bath, but you probably don't think it's especially interesting. However, for years, people thought that baths were the most amazing thing. They would go on holiday just to have a bath. Baths haven't changed. It's just that it's become easier and inexpensive to have one. We don't think of them as so important. Having a bath can sometimes even feel a bit like a chore. Maybe you hardly think about it at all, about how nice of a glass of water can be. It seems pretty boring, but if you've been running around and you get very thirsty and your mouth is dry, when you finally get a sip of water, it's amazing. It's only then that you notice how clean and fresh water is, and how lovely it feels to drink it. You would think water was one of the nicest things you could possibly have.
There is a good trick that you can play on yourself that can help you to remember the value of simple things. Try giving something cheap the kind of attention you'd usually give to something very expensive. You could bite into a potato wedge and really think about how warm and comforting it tastes, as if you were the first person to try it in your entire country. Or you could imagine you were the only person in the world who was allowed to brush their teeth. You'd be amazed by what an interesting experience it is and how fresh your mouth feels afterwards. Or try imagining that a pencil costs as much as a car. You'd start to notice how clever it is that you can sharpen it and use it to make marks on paper.
We can choose to give attention to anything, no matter how small or seemingly ordinary, and make it in turn much nicer. An idea from Mary Wollstonecraft. Mary Wollstonecraft was an English philosopher who was born in 1759, over 200 years ago. She was raised in London, and her childhood was not very happy because her parents quarrelled a lot. When she was older, she and her sisters opened a school. This was quite a scandal because at that time a lot of people thought that only boys should get a good education. But Mary Wollstonecraft disagreed very strongly. She was a very good teacher and she wrote a philosophy book for children. One of the chapters in her book is about procrastination. She liked going to parties and became friends with a lot of interesting people. She was very brave and not too worried about what people might think of her. Once she travelled to Sweden, Norway and Denmark to try and rescue some treasures that had been stolen from one of her friends.
Mary Wollstonecraft was very interested on how people spend money. She tried to teach people to think hard about what they really want before they were to buy anything. Mary Wollstonecraft called this idea of hard thinking about being rational. She felt that a lot of well-off people wasted their money on things they didn't like or enjoy.
She definitely would not have encouraged people to spend a fortune buying expensive pineapples. It is not that she thought it was nice to be poor. She liked wearing nice clothes and was very pleased when she made money from the book she wrote. But she thought that a lot of people forget how nice, simple, and ordinary things can actually be.
She tried to help them remember, and hopefully she can help you remember too.
What is fair?
What's fair? Some families have more and some families have less. Some people have swimming pools while others do not even have a garden. Some people go on lots of holidays and others have to stay at home. Some houses are huge but others are not very nice at all.
Is it fair that some people have lots of nice things and others do not? Philosophers have thought a lot about what makes things fair. They are called political philosophers and they try to work out how the world could be fairer. But before we can do that, they have to ask a tricky question. What is fair? What does fair actually mean?
Imagine you are cutting up a pizza to share with other people. If there are six people, it seems only fair to cut in six pieces that are all the same size. Then everyone will get the same. If you're in charge of the world, could you do the same with money and houses and nice holidays? Would it be fair if you gave everyone exactly the same? You would think so, but maybe not. Some people work much harder than the others. Some people have very good ideas that help a lot of other people. Maybe it's okay if they get more. Or what if someone's parents are really quite nice? They help their children lots and listen carefully and take them on interesting trips. Could you say, it's not fair that you have such nice parents because other people do not have such nice parents? Your parents should not be allowed to be so good for you. Or if someone is really good at maths or running, is that fair? Would you say you have to wear very heavy shoes and miss all the math lessons so that everyone can be the same at running and maths? Probably not.
So maybe the idea of making everything the same doesn't really work. Of course, there will be some differences. The problem is, how big will they be? To make everything as fair as possible, you'd want everyone to be as equal as possible. Think about this. What if, before you were even born, you were able to look down from the sky at the whole world? You can see all the lives that people are leading, but you don't know which life was going to be yours. You can see all the families, but you don't know which family you might be born into, what house you'll live in, or what school you go to. You might be lucky and land in a nice place and get some very nice things, or you might be unlucky and get the worst ones.
Looking at one country, you might see some really great places you could land. There are families with helicopters and amazing houses with two swimming pools. But then you notice that most families in this country have hardly anything.
How will the world end?
Ah, this is life, sitting by the beach, just relaxing. Quick, run. The water levels are rising too high. If we don't go quickly, we're all going to drown. A philosopher once thought that the world will fade eventually from climate change and heat from the sun. So the world will just fade until there is nothing, just the void at the end of time, where every living thing will stop living, breathing, and no longer having the gift of life.
This ties in with our question, how the Earth end? There are many ideas on how the Earth will end. Some people say by that point, all life on Earth will be extinct. The most probable fate of the planet is absorption by the sun in about 7.5 billion years after the star has entered the red giant phase and expanded beyond the planet's current orbit.
A philosopher once thought that the world will slowly melt down until it is nothing because of climate change. The world will overheat because of deforestation. We'll have no oxygen. The volcanoes will continue to erupt and destroy the Earth. Earthquakes will continue to destroy the Earth's tectonic plates.
The sun will eventually overheat and we will not be able to live on Earth because it will probably explode into a big ball of rubbish because of how much we litter. Speaking of littering, eventually there will be more rubbish in the ocean than fish. Fish help our ecosystem.
One day, all the rocks will make up a huge asteroid and it'll hit the Earth's surface and the Earth will explode. The end. Just kidding. Keep listening. The asteroid will destroy most of the world, to be honest. Did you know that 27 million people die a year from pollution? If we keep up our pollution rates, the world will cease to exist, and that is not how we want the world to end.
If you have any ideas on how the world will end, send it through to bigthoughts@aquinas.wa.edu.au. You might be featured in our next episode. This is how philosophers think the world will end. How do you think the world will end?
How will humans as a species go extinct?
Will humans as species go extinct?
The short answer is yes. The fossil record shows everything goes extinct eventually. Almost all species that ever lived, over 99.9%, are extinct. Humans are inevitably heading for extinction. Headlines often suggest this extinction is likely to occur. The threat of Earth-grazing asteroids is a media favourite. Humans have weaknesses. Large warm-blooded animals, like us, don't handle ecological disruptions well. Small cold-blooded turtles and snakes can last months without food, so they survive. Big animals with fast metabolisms, Tyrannosaurus or humans, require lots of food constantly. That leaves them vulnerable to even brief food chain distributions caused by catastrophes such as volcanoes, global warming, ice ages, or the impact winter after an asteroid collision. We're also long-lived, with long generation times and few offspring. Slow reproduction makes it hard to recover from population crashes and slows natural selection, making it difficult to adapt to rapid environmental changes that doomed mammoths, ground sloths, and other megafauna.
Big mammals reproduce too slowly to withstand or adapt to human overhunting. So we're vulnerable, but there are reasons to think humans are resistant to extinction, maybe uniquely so. We're a deeply strange species, widespread, abundant, supremely adaptable, which all suggests we'll stick around for a while. Many possible scenarios of human extinction have been proposed, such as climate change, global nuclear war, biological warfare, and natural habitat collapse. Some scenarios center on emerging technologies such as advanced artificial intelligence, biotechnology, or self-replicating nanobots. A new opinion piece in the New York Times argues that humanity is horrible to other forms for our life, that our extinction wouldn't be all that bad, morally speaking. The author, Dr. Todd May, is a philosopher who is known for advising the writers of The Good Place. The idea of human extinction is a big one, with lots of disagreement on its moral value.
Humans could go extinct. The idea has been floating around science fiction since 1826. It dominated diplomatic thinking during the Cold War, and it fills some with existential dread. While most people would think humans are going extinct, it would obviously be a bad thing. These people aren't philosophers. This strange breed of human looks at the problem from many points of view and often comes to conclusions that might shock you. In his opinion essay in the New York Times, philosophy professor Todd May considers the idea of human extinction and decides it would be a good idea, but notes that it might just be a good thing. Knowing how confusing that sentence was, he explains the idea by looking to tragic heroes in literature. Characters like Oedipus and King Lear do bad things, yet invoke our sympathy. The idea is that humanity is doing bad things that could only be stopped with the extinction of humanity, but that we still have every reason to feel sympathetic for humanity despite this. The bad things Dr. May refers to in this case are the suffering we cause to animals and the damage we cause to the environment. He makes specific reference to the vast numbers of animals we breed into existence, cram into factory farms to live unpleasant lives, getting fat, then eat them. As one example, he mentions how human-caused climate change will alter national parks.
Our often wanton destruction on the environment is unmatched by any other creature.
He concludes that while humanity has done some good things, like making art and writing good plays, it would make the world better off to see us go. The loss of art, beauty, and the rest would be the tragic element that should but doesn't outweigh what we're doing to nature. He admits the harshness and controversial nature of this stance and explains, "It may well be then that the extinction of humanity would make the world better off and yet would be a tragedy. I don't want to say this for sure since the issue is quite complex. But it is certainly seems like a possibility and that by itself disturbs me."
The idea that it would be for the best if humanity died off is held by more people than you might imagine.